After you ask the closing question, it may be awkward, it may be uncomfortable, but you just let there be dead air if need to. Like, the ball's in their court. Eventually, they're going to answer.
And they'll either say, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I know about those things that works. Or they'll be like, no, they say, need $5 million.
Exactly. And this, we're dealing with the scenario where they say no. You know, a lot of times they may just say no, and they may not give you a price or anything like that. So, and a lot of times you have to kind of get that out of them.
Welcome to Turning Profit, a podcast for people that love real estate. Learn the business models and skills that professional real estate investors use to make money and build wealth. Visit turningprofit.com for a wealth of investor resources. And now, here are your hosts, Pete and Heather Reese.
Welcome to the Turning Profit Podcast. Heather, it's so great to be here once again.
Yeah, I have no idea what we're talking about today.
Well, thankfully you've got me. I don't know what you'd do without me, actually.
Right? I mean, I would have absolutely no idea what to talk about.
Yeah, but today we're talking about a really cool subject, and that is how to negotiate a lower price on your land investments.
I'm surprised we haven't actually talked about this before, because this is like...
Yeah, I mean, we may have mentioned it a little bit here and there, but it's really important, and I get this question all the time. It's because, you know, part of our process is what we do when we are buying these properties or generate leads is most of the land investors that I know and us, we send out offers. So we send out actual offers in the mail with a defined amount on those offers. And the problem comes in sometimes when a lead responds, a seller responds, you look at the property in detail, and then you kind of realize that your price was too high. So there are many investors out there that at that point in time, they just give up. They're like, oh, I missed it. And they're not going to accept a lower price. You know, now that they're not going to accept going down in price. But in reality, it happens a lot, quite a bit. And then we have to renegotiate based off of what the details are on that property. I prepared kind of our whole procedure that our team goes through when we run into this situation. And I'd say probably, I don't have any hard numbers on this. I'd have to do a study on it. But I'd say the majority of our deals happen this way. I mean, the problem is, when we're sending out these offers, and especially on a lot of the rural properties that we do, that there is just so much variance from property to property. So when we're looking at, say, a 10-acre property in a particular area, these 10-acre properties could all be on the same street and have three wildly different values. So we might have one that's all wetlands, one that is fully wooded, and another that's a beautiful pasture with horses and things like that. So it really depends. And we don't know that type of stuff until we look at the property specifically. And, you know, we're mailing out thousands and thousands of offers. So it's really not feasible to investigate each property before we send out the offer letter to those properties. So what we have to do is when a lead responds, we have to adapt. We have to see what it is and put a value on it at that time, and then see how it compares to what we offered and negotiate accordingly.
Right. I mean, real estate is all about negotiations, ups, downs, all arounds, right? So I know it would be a lot easier if there was a way to preemptively, and maybe there will be someday with AI, where it'll be able, you'll say, okay, this is the range, and you'll, you know, front load it with, like, you know, whatever those variations are, and it'll be able to go on like Google Street Level to some extent or something and look at it. Like, it could get to that point.
Oh yeah,
right?
Well, the technology is available now,
right?
It's just someone that with some real knowledge in this business really needs to train it accordingly,
right?
So
that could come, but for right now there isn't. And a lot of people, once you actually talk to them, they understand. Like, if their property is on the side of a cliff, right, and it has a tiny pad, and they get an offer that's for the neighbor's property, like you said, that's like a perfect pasture, that maybe even has like a natural raised bed, that's, I mean, original wood, like, they know, you know, once you point it out to them. But I think that on the investor side is where people get hung up, because they're nervous about that,
right?
Because they think, well, I sent them this offer and now I can't do it,
right? I can't, you know, and I have to stop too, because like we do, you know, we send out an offer, and when we look at the property, if it works at that price, hey, that's what I love. I mean, that's perfect.
That's ideal.
Right. You know, there's so many variances with these properties that a lot of times there's the negotiation. And it happens both ways too. Right. Like, sometimes we send in an offer and then we look at the property and it's a premium property. And the seller's like, hey, I'd like some more for this property. It's a really nice property and everything. We find out what it's going to take to put a deal together, and we see if we can do it. So we come up in price too. But today we're talking about how to negotiate down, and not just for the sake of getting a cheaper price, but for the sake of putting a deal together. You know, a lot of times if we look at a property and it's got some real negative things about it and it's worth less than what our offer price was, I may still want to buy it, but it's got to be at the right price in order for us to move forward. I'm not just going to buy it based off of the offer price where we're making a very low margin on the property and it's a very risky type investment. So.
Right. And I guess I'd point out too that it's not like the goal isn't to like squeak out every penny and screw somebody over.
Right.
You know, I think that's the other thing to point out. No, it's supposed to be kind of a fair offer, taking into account that there are things that we have to do. And that's the other thing too, is you might have sent out an offer and the price, but then you realize, well, shoot, this one doesn't, it's going to need some work to get it done, to make it work. So we have to account for that as well.
Yeah. Okay. Value add, as we
value
call it.
Value add. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the technical term that we use.
Sorry. Your professional lingo here. I'm like, you know, the stuff, the extra stuff. So
I always make fun of Heather, a little side tangent here. I always make fun of Heather because she's really into travel, you know, with your travel blog and everything that
you I'm like, where are you going
years.
With this? I'm
like, no, but she always talks about airports with the code.
Oh, thank you. Make fun of me.
So what's an example of an airport code?
I don't know. Now you're putting me on the spot. I'm like, I'm not gonna
what's
say
SNA.
I knew you were gonna pull that one. John Wayne. I know. Huh? It's John Wayne, which is Orange
it?
County.
Okay.
Or all right. Santa, so Anna, I whatever they know. Call it. Yeah, okay. There's different names.
Yeah,
for that
so
one.
She'll throw out these codes to me and I always push back.
And I'm not even doing it to be pretentious. That's just how my brain is thinking. But if I am better than
way,
you
Heather.
Because of that, it's just a byproduct, you know?
Okay.
That's funny. I was like, where is he going with this? So the other thing too, I wanted to point out really quick, because I always do this at the end, but like, why are you capable of talking about this? Like, it's important for me that people are, if they're joining us for the first time, understand your qualifications in order to even be talking about this.
Oh, okay. Well, we run a land investment company, and we've been doing this about 2.5 years at this point at the time of this filming.
Okay.
We have done hundreds of investments, profitable investments, over that time. And we also have a community and a full training program and everything based off of our exact business model and what we do and all that stuff. So
I'm going to do this myself. So you've been a licensed real estate broker in the state of California for how many years?
2003?
Over 20
years.
No,
2006. I always get this confused.
Yeah.
2006 is when I got licensed
right,
in California.
Okay.
But previous to that, previous to my career as an investor, we were investors. We were buying and selling homes and things like that. Got my real estate broker's license. And then at that point, we realized, you know, the market crashed, first of all, and real estate investing wasn't the best thing.
When the market crashed.
Yeah, that it was a tough road. Well, people weren't even getting loans and things, so we'd fix up homes and then you don't have anyone to sell them to. So anyhow, we decided to simply pivot a little bit and use that real estate license, because Heather was an agent too. But we used a real estate license to help other investors buy properties. That was the best buying opportunity ever. It's just not a lot of people had the extra money to actually make those things happen. But the people that did, they made out like bandits, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, so many years did that, help clients, mostly investors throughout that time period. I briefly got into selling luxury homes and things like that, and then pivoted out of our real estate altogether to kind of work on an education business with you.
And he skips the years that you did REOs, bank owned, which was just valuation central, right? Like, those were pivotal years, not because they were fun, but because, I mean, we valuated thousands of properties, I would think.
Many thousands.
Yeah, it was just nonstop. So, and kind of have used that skill to do this business, but also that goes into the training program, because I think that you're able to share kind of like that. I don't know. It's something where, you could do it for, I don't know how many years. You could just be dedicating your life to valuing for years, or you could like kind of get inside your brain and can you help me here?
I just picked up a lot of experience with investment properties and evaluating properties and, you know, things like that over time. And it all kind of came together and it really helped me get going in this land investing business. But I realized that there's a lot, and I enjoy kind of helping others get started as well. And that's kind of what led to getting our community started, which, by the way, it's called Land Conquest. and it's on the school platform. So we have a free community there. And then we also have a membership program where we've got a training course, and we've also got our software system that we use to run our business is included in that. And then a weekly call with me, a Q&A thing where I evaluate properties and everything like that. But,
I'm sure
regardless,
that's fun. Huh? I'm just kidding. I said, I'm sure.
Yeah, I noticed you're
fun.
Never on the calls with me.
That's Madeline, our oldest. Yes. That's her. I stay in my lane.
Want to learn the secret to building a thriving land flipping business? Head on over to landconquest.com and join over 2,000 passionate land flippers leveraging the power of community to scale quickly. Sign up for free at landconquest.com. All right, let's get back to the show.
Okay, well, maybe you should come on the call. Maybe you should run the next call.
I should run the next call. Yes. Yeah, I don't think that would go very well. My brain's all over the place. Okay. But so lots of experience. But the good news is you don't need to have a real estate broker's license. You don't have to have an agent's license. You don't have to have any of that. And that's the whole reason that we put it together was kind of like, how could you jump ahead to do it? And it's kind of like your, I almost call it your side project because you really enjoy it, like working with the community. Yeah. And then that's like in your spare time.
Yes.
And then in your non-spare time, you're running the business and other businesses. So
we've got a large team built out now, and it's not just me doing everything.
In our actual company.
Actual company, yeah. So we're buying and selling lots of properties each month, and we were previously posting our income reports and things like that. If you're interested in that, you can look at it in our Land Conquest community.
And 51st Deals. I do want to point that one out because I think that's pretty cool. Resource.
That's a good resource. Filmed a video basically breaking down the 51st deals that we did, like what we bought them for, what we sold them for, tips on those properties, things I learned, you know, like our exact numbers, like a return on investment and all that kind of stuff. So that's in that 51st deal. Mm-hmm. So you can find that right now. We're shuffling some things around, but so you can find that right now in on our Turning Profit website, which is turningprofit.com.
Yeah, we're just trying to streamline things so that it's very basic steps to follow. Okay, so today we're talking about how to negotiate a lower price in your land investments. And we already talked about how it's got to be done sometimes. But we want to go into the actual steps and like the thinking behind it. And so if you're in this situation, you can kind of have a...
How to do it for yourself.
Exactly.
Yes. And what script to use and everything like that to talk to these sellers. So,
okay, take it away.
Well, it starts with the facts. You know, when these leads come in, we evaluate the property. We may be looking at this property and think, oh, well, half of this property is FEMA flood zone and a quarter of it's wetlands also, and it's got a bigger slope than we like, and the access isn't great. So it's got a number of negative features and factors to it that are sort of making it worth less than maybe an average property in this particular
and
area.
And a reasonable seller will acknowledge this.
Right. So, this isn't a shock. So this is kind of how we like to approach it. We're always talking to the seller. We try to get them on the phone. I mean, if they don't want to get on the phone, sometimes it's email or whatever, but we try to get them on the phone and we have a discussion with them about the property. And I've heard this before, that a good trial attorney knows the answer to a question before they even ask it. So they're leading people with their questions, basically.
I've been using that with our kids.
Okay, so maybe that's 20-something maybe years. You're the person that I heard it from. So we take the same kind of concept. We really look at these properties kind of in detail before we get on the phone and have this detailed discussion with the sellers. And we try to bring it out of them, like these negative features. So say, for instance, there's FEMA flood zone there. Mm-hmm. You know, we know it. We know there's wetlands, or we know that the access isn't too great. Some of these negative things. We'll ask them. So it's a little unclear to me about the access on this property. Can you kind of, you know, it's not a paved road, right? You know, and you can kind of ask them about that situation. You're trying to bring these things out and having them actually acknowledge them, which is important. You could sit there and say, oh, it's got all these negative things, and then psychologically most of the sellers are going to get defensive about it, like, oh, you're insulting my property,
right?
But if they're the ones to kind of in this discussion acknowledge some of these things that are negatives about the property, then things tend to go much smoother.
Yeah, if they're like, oh, there is access, I mean, yeah, there's this like tiny little dirt road.
Yes. Oh, so it's not a paved road. Okay. All right.
it's pretty tiny, but you can get on there. It's a little bit on John's property too.
Do I need a four-wheel drive to get in?
Like, that's the better way to do it is with the 4x4. And also, if it's raining, just be careful.
Yeah.
You do have to cross.
So there's ways you can bring out some of these negatives without being so confrontational and like just pointing them out and saying, this is the rose, what's wrong? These are all these negative things. Okay, so if it has FEMA flood zone and you know it, you might say, hey, do you know if this property is in the flood zone at all? It looks a little low on the map and whatever. Or, you know, what's the situation with the wetlands? Is there some wetlands on this property? You know, can you pretty much access it? Like, is it wet to step on and things like that? So you ask those types of questions and get some clarity. You know, the bottom line is, you know, they may not know anything about the property, but if they do, then it's kind of important to kind of bring those things out. It really helps your kind of negotiation. And then, you know, you're asking some open-ended questions about that. We've done other episodes about like what you should be asking sellers, but this is the particular stuff about the renegotiations here. After you've had that discussion and they've hopefully acknowledged some of the negative aspects, I would say the following. I wrote this down because I don't want to mess this up. I like your property and that's why I sent you an offer. However, when we sent you out the offer, we didn't have all the information. We base our offer prices based off of the averages for a particular area. And sometimes when we dive a little deeper on a property, we realize that we're still a little bit too high. Now, with your property, there are some things that negatively affect the value, like the access is tricky, like we talked about, and the fact that, you know, half the property is in the FEMA flood zone. Now, those are kind of like, you know, it is what it is about the property, and it doesn't stop me from wanting to buy the property. And I want to be clear, that doesn't mean that I'm just not interested in buying it. I still like your property, and I'd like to purchase it from you. It's just that the price that we can pay is a little bit different than our original offer. Now, based off of these factors, the best we can offer you at this point is $75,000. Now, keep in mind, we're paying all the closing costs and there are no commissions. We do our best to make this a quick and easy process. You'll end up with the full $75,000 at closing. Does that work for you? And after you say that, does that work for you? You stop and you don't say anything else.
Right. You don't want to be negotiating with yourself.
Yes. That's one of the big things with sales is like after you ask the closing question, it may be awkward, it may be uncomfortable, but you just let there be dead air if you need to. Like the ball's in their court. Eventually, they're going to answer.
And it's also the kind of question, it's like, does that work for you? Not like, okay, so let's do this or something. Right. Like,
it's not cheesy, yeah. It's just kind of like, does it work or not? I'm going to need your agreement, you know.
Yeah, does this work? And they'll either say, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I know about those things that works. Or they'll be like, no.
Yeah, so if they say
$5 million.
Exactly. And it is, we're dealing with the scenario where they say no. Mm-hmm. And typically, you know, a lot of times they may just say no and they may not give you a price or anything like that. So, and a lot of times you have to kind of get that out of them. So generally they're going to say the price. And in those cases, I would respond with, I certainly understand that the revised price may come as a little bit of a shock, but I had to operate with all the information that I have. In this case, there are some things about the property that, like we discussed, that we have that have a negative impact on the value. Now, keep in mind, I don't have much flexibility here, but what price would it take to put together a deal? Mm-hmm. And again, this is a spot where you just basically close your mouth and you are looking for a response. Mm-hmm. If they give you something reasonable that you can make it work, I would suggest kind of doing a little deliberation, okay, that's a little bit more than I thought, kind of hem and haw a little bit. You don't want to say, okay, I'll take it.
Right.
You know, you want to make it seem like it's a tough decision. Now, maybe you're putting on a little bit of a show, but it's kind of part of salesmanship.
Right, because the problem is if you say, okay, that's fine, we'll just do that. They're going to be like, I left more on the table.
Yeah.
Then there's kind of like that doubt gets in there. So you have to be like, okay, can I do that? Yeah. Okay, that works.
Yeah. So you would say, you know, that is really pushing it for me. I don't know. I like the property. I'd love to do business with you. I'll go ahead and do it. Mm-hmm. You ready to get this? Let's just get it done. So you make it sound like you're really having to come to the table.
Well, and you are though, because you are.
It's higher than you wanted to pay.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and then the other thing to remember throughout this whole thing is that the goal is, like, you're not buying this. Hopefully, you're not buying this property. You're not forcing a deal. We always talk about that.
Never force a deal.
This isn't one where you're like, well, there's scarcity of land, which there's not. This is one of those things where you're like, okay, I do want this. It is a good property. I will be able to sell it. The goal is to come up, is to make a deal. You're not trying to, like, you know, pull one over. You're not trying to, like, be the king of the whatever. It's to put a deal together, right? Everyone's happy.
Boost your land flipping earnings with our new Land Conquest business system. It's designed for efficiency and effectiveness. This cutting-edge software tool is your key to success in the land flipping industry. Streamline and automate your operations to scale your business to new heights. With our system, you get a customizable website with 6 professional templates to choose from, up to 5 dedicated phone numbers, each with their own chosen area codes for creating a trustworthy local presence. And as a bonus, you'll get a $25 credit for SMS and email sends. You'll also get access to our tech team to build any automations or customizations that you want. And not to mention, we've got a great dedicated community to the Land Conquest business system to help us all thrive together. And with every step of the way, you get our 24/7 live chat support. But that's not all. You'll also gain access to our exclusive community to connect and grow with fellow land flippers. Seize the opportunity to transform your business. Visit software.landconquest.com to check out the Land Conquest business system and unlock the next stage of your land flipping success.
Put a deal together. So if they give you something reasonable, you obviously, you know, accept it and go through that process. Now, if they give you something outside of your range, here's what I'd suggest saying. Yes, it does sound like we're a little bit too far apart here. I'd still love to buy your property, but it has to make sense for me. Mm-hmm. Please reach out to me and let me know if that changes. I was really hoping we could make something work.
Mm-hmm. And most of the time they will.
Right. Yeah.
There's a good chance.
If you're close and they're reasonable, they want to sell, they're mm-hmm. actually motivated. Then it's all about the follow-up. And a lot of deals happen during the follow-up. So I suggest following up the next day and then a week and then 2 weeks. When you follow up, you just say, hey, I've been thinking about your property. I know we're kind of too far apart in the price. I just wanted to check in and see, you know, if you've thought about our offer again, mm-hmm. something like that. So just, you know, make it sound like you really want to buy their property. You're kind of torn apart about this, that you couldn't mm-hmm. make something work. And just get them thinking about it. And a lot of times people will have a gut reaction to a lesser price. And the gut reaction normally is, no, I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. Then when they think about it, then when they start thinking about, oh, I got to call an agent. And if I do sell through an agent, then I've got to do some prep work to my property, or it could take a year, or then I'm going to have to pay all these commissions and all this kind of stuff. So they start thinking.
They'll have to get septic, right. Like engineering work. There's a lot of stuff when they actually talk to an agent. The agent's like, oh yeah, we can do it, but we're going to do all this. Or
to retail the property, you mm-hmm. know, and this is a different thing, you know. So follow up, as they say, the fortune is in the follow up, Heather.
Okay.
That's what they say.
I like it.
Yeah. So many deals come together in that follow up. So it's very, very important to kind of stay on that track. Now, you don't want to bug people and call them like every day or something like that. But, you know, at first you want to do a tighter time frame and then sort of spread that out over time. At some point, you know, as long as they're not telling you to go away or something like that, never call me again, leave me alone, you're stalking me. If you hear any of those types of things, I'd probably
not call them back. It's not worth it.
All right. So that is the topic for today. Mm-hmm. I hopefully think that will help a lot of people.
Yeah. The takeaway is that the goal is to put the deal together if it's an actual deal.
Right.
Put yourself in their, you know, space. You're going to have to do kind of a little mind stuff just to kind of like push through it, because no one likes to think. A lot of people like have already spent the money. Mm-hmm. When they get an offer, they're like, okay,
right,
I've spent it. This is gone. And then and they might even be thinking, joke's on them. There's these issues, like, right, you know, there's no way or whatever, or they really love the property. So it's just kind of about getting to that. Just keep in mind what the goal is. And it's all about getting them to understand the reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you're just, I mean, I guess theoretically you could be like, I totally blew it, but that's not going to work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's always a reason why.
Well, now that we've covered that topic, on to the next segment of our Turning Profit podcast. And this is a weekly thing that we do where we cherry pick questions from our Land Conquest community. And by the way, to find that Land Conquest community, you can simply go to landconquest.com, or if you are on the school platform, which is SKOOL. I don't know why they misspelled that, but so it's SKOOL.com/landconquest. All right. So we've cherry picked 4 questions. Heather is going to ask me those questions and we're going to answer them to the best of our ability.
Sounds good. I like threw my notes on the ground. I was like, done.
You're done with it.
Okay. I'm ready for this. Okay. So first question from the community comes from Mohammed. He says, comps. When looking at solds while comping a property and seeing no recent activity for the last year, is that a red flag for you guys? Are you still going to come up with a best guess offer or move on from that potential deal? I was thinking to move on since I thought that was a red flag in moving forward.
If it's truly an area where there is just no land that is being sold, mm-hmm. I would lean towards, you know, not making an offer, because it's probably going to be difficult.
Get into the reason why, though. It's not because you can't price it, right?
Right.
It's because no one's buying land.
Yeah, it's just simply not an active market. Right. There aren't buyers. People don't want to buy land there for whatever reason. Maybe it was very near a nuclear testing site. I don't know.
So I'm like,
could be lots of reasons.
We go to the nuclear on that one. Yeah, I mean.
But I have to say some caveats, though, because sometimes when you pull up some comps in a particular area, you know, if you're looking at rural properties, you might have to expand to the whole county or even some neighboring counties sometimes. Some of the issues are that there's very few properties that get listed. Mm-hmm. So, and if very few properties get listed, there's going to be very few sales. So you might want to expand kind of your time that you're looking at. Normally we're looking at 12 months, but sometimes we look back a little bit further in some of these rural areas. You might want to expand your geography a little bit. You might want to see what the listings are like. If there's very few listings, then it could be a potential thing where, hey, if you do get a property that you can list reasonably, then hopefully it will sell. You
know, right,
like you just gotta look at, like, do things sell in here when they're listed, or do they just no one list things? So
I think that's important, though, because, you know, there might be people who are like, I would love to have some land here, but no one ever sells it because generations for, you know, that could be a really big deal.
Yeah. So just look at it a little further and kind of try to investigate the reason why there's no comps. And maybe you might have to expand your search a little bit in order to.
Right. But if there's no sales and there's a bunch listed,
that's a problem. Or even if there's a good amount listed and just simply no sales, like doesn't even have to be like flooded with listings. Right. They're just like, you know, a good number of listings and then there's just no sales. It means like there's just no demand. And I don't like those areas.
No, because our whole goal is to keep the money moving.
Yeah. Even if it's cheap. Even if it's cheap, those properties just don't sell very quickly.
No, because that means they have to be even cheaper. And you're still, it's like you're selling, I don't know, sandwiches and I don't know what I was.
You're trying to sell ice to Eskimos.
Thank you. That is exactly what I was looking for. Sandwiches. And I was like,
sandwiches to a sandwich maker.
There we go.
Someone that works at Subway.
This is awkward.
Because they get them for free on their shift.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. Okay, so next question from the community comes from Ivan. It's harvestable tree value. Hello, I keep coming across landowners who have harvested trees on their property, which they would like included in the price.
Well, I think he means like harvestable.
Okay, maybe. That's what I was thinking. Okay, I'm like, that doesn't, if they've already harvested them, then we're not paying for them too. Anyone familiar on how I can estimate the value of trees to include in my offers?
You know, sellers will typically try to do this. They're going to try to... They think their land is worth what the land price is, and then like
plus
crop value for these trees on there. Now, typically, we're not looking at that way. I mean, I guess you could break it down that way, but typically, they're trying to look at it in that way because the numbers add up to a higher amount from their perspective. So
it's like buying a building with a business in it.
Right.
So they're saying like, but.
Yeah, exactly. So are you looking for funding for your land flipping deal? Then head on over to partnerwithpete.com. It's an innovative new funding program where we split the profits with you 50-50, but we take it one step further and we handle every other step of the process in the land flipping business. Yes, that means we handle all the due diligence. If the property needs any value add, like clearing brush, perk test, survey, we'll get that paid for up front. Then when the property resells, we split the profits 50-50. There is absolutely no downside for you as an investor. If we lose money, we don't pass that on to you. But when we make money, when we make profit, we split the proceeds 50-50. So as a recap, we handle every part of the process. We split the profits with you 50-50. There's no downside for you as the investor, only upside. So go to partnerwithpete.com, submit your deal there, and we'll get it checked out within 24 hours. So typically the way we're looking at it, we're just looking for comparable properties with a similar type of trees on, similar maturity of trees on there and things like that. And then obviously if we're looking at a property that has no, that's recently been clear cut, we give a discount on what our estimated value is. So I would just look at it in that way. I wouldn't get into this game like, oh, we're going to have a timber person come out and evaluate these trees and then look at like bare land value is like, it typically just doesn't work. You just want to look for comps that have similar type of situation.
Right. And there'd be no way to like add it on to your offers original. I mean,
yeah, we have sellers asking this type of thing all the time, and rarely they're reasonable. I mean, they're always looking for a total value of more than,
you know, than the land's worth.
Yeah, exactly.
And then and that's not an easy process. And is it even a process you really want to be doing? It makes sense in some ways, but also we're not in the forest clearing. Yeah, in clearing business. Mm-hmm. It's not my like goal in life.
Right.
Okay, so Andrew has more competition, infill, or rural rec? Curious on everyone's opinion. Do you think that there's more competition in the small info lot space or the rural rec? I would assume the rural rec, as there is a larger range of parcel sizes. But on the flip side, you can fit a good amount of 0.25 acres to 1 acre lots in a 20 acre space. Now you're free. You are ready to go on this one.
Yeah,
you were like,
I was.
I've
read
back.
The question already. But so there we go. Know, I know what the, I know what the concern here is. Like, hey, is it going to be more competition if I go for infill lots or if I go for rural properties? And my answer to that is, it depends. It depends on the area.
Location, yeah.
Yeah, some places, you know, are very hot, you know, kind of suburban areas where there's any sort of like infill lot that comes up, the builders snap it up because they know that as soon as they build something there, it's going to sell.
Yeah.
No problem. You know, and sometimes there's rural areas that are very popular and there is, you know, things sell right away and things like that. So it really just depends. I don't think there's one. And then you come into some situations where there's, you know, you've got infill lots that are in, say, a rural town or a town that is on the decline or something like that. And those are just really tough to sell. Mm-hmm. So there's not one blanket answer for that. It really depends on the location.
Yeah. I mean, if it's a really built up city too, or town or whatever, you got to wonder, why are these still, unless it's a new development. But
yeah.
That's why you just need to know your location. There's no like easy way to, like, you can't value the same piece of land on the East Coast versus the West Coast or Florida versus Oregon. So it's the same kind of thing. Okay, next question is from Colby, seller with no email. Hey guys, just got a verbal yes on a very motivated seller. Unfortunately, he does not have email. Do I just send a letter in the mail with the contract?
Yeah, so we've run into this sometimes. Some of the people that, you know, are interested in selling or maybe older, and they're not really, they're not doing much with emails.
Electronic communication.
Yeah, electronic communication, mm-hmm. Exactly. So there are a number of options. First of all, you could ask them to send their offer back to you in the mail. If you have to renegotiate, normally what we say is just draw a line through the price that was on there, write the new price in there that you agreed to verbally, and have them initial beside it, as well as signing the purchase agreement. That's one way to do it. You can ask them, there's all kinds of different options, and some people are interested in going some of these routes, and sometimes they're not. Some of the electronic signing apps will allow you to actually text that. So some of them may not have emails, but they do text message. Mm-hmm. So you could text a link to the contract to sign. That's another thing. Another thing you can do is you can say, hey, you can fax it to me if you have a fax number. And you'll be surprised. A lot of these people have fax machines. May not use them in a while, but some of them are faxing their doctor's offices. Mm-hmm. A lot of doctor's offices still use faxes and things. Anyhow, or they could go to the UPS store and fax something to you.
Right.
Or email something to you. That's kind of the quicker ways to do things. A lot of times, none of those options work. You know, they're just simply like, hey, I want to send me a new contract. I want to sign it, and I'm going to mail it back to you. In those types of situations, if it's a deal that I'm really excited about or whatever, which are most deals, if it's a deal, is that we will send it then in a UPS, normally a UPS 2-day or 1-day envelope, something like that. So it gets delivered by hand. It stands out from the regular mail and everything like that. And yes, you may pay $30 for this or something like that, but how much does it cost to get a good deal? So I like to do that just so it doesn't get lost in the weeds and just so they know we're serious about it.
And then you include like a return that are you getting
exactly.
to that?
Yeah. Yeah. Normally include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Mm-hmm. You know, you could try including a prepaid UPS thing in there as well, but then they have to go drop it off at the UPS store or Dropbox or something like that. That's extra hassle. So
you're just trying to cut the friction, make this as easy as possible for them. They know you're legit. You're sending it UPS, and then make it easy for them to get it back.
Track the package when it gets delivered, call them and talk them through signing it and everything like that. So just very important type things. Just, you know, it gives them some assurances that you're a legit company and things like that. So we found that that works really well. A little bit of a hassle, I know, but sometimes you got to do what you got to do. Mm-hmm. This was a really enlightening episode.
Enlightening, I like these big words, yeah.
Yes. So where can they find you, Heather?
No, stop it. You're stealing my thing. So I always say at the end, I'm like, okay, Pete, that was great. Actually, you stole my whole thing. Where am I? Where's my brain? So where can everyone find you?
Well, on Instagram, you can find me at Partner with Pete.
And why are you Partner with Pete?
Okay, that's a good thing. I should mention Partner with Pete. Mm-hmm. Now, Partner with Pete is our funding program. It's partnerwithpete.com if you want to check it out. And basically what we do is we work with investors and we fund their deals for them, meaning We're essentially the bank. The investor that we work with, they get a property under contract. We will take, you submit that contract to us. We review the deal. If it is a deal and it fits within our criteria, then we will agree to fund that deal, meaning we'll use our money to actually close the transaction. And we take it even one step further than other deal funders out there. We plug it into our whole team's processes. We do all the due diligence. We handle the transaction. We'll pay for a surveyor if we need to, septic. You know, we'll even do lot split sometimes. And then we will remarket the property to resell it. And when it resells, we split the profits 50-50. So it's a real good win-win scenario for the investor. It's cool because there's no risk for them at all. If the property loses money or something like that, then there's no liability for them in that. But they do capture all the upside, or 50% of the upside. We get the other 50% of the upside. So, and you don't have to bring any money to the table, which is kind of cool. So it allows you to focus your efforts on getting more deals and the marketing and all that kind of stuff, which really moves the needle in this business. So anyhow, check that out at partnerwithpete.com. So yeah, you can find me on Instagram at partnerwithpete. On YouTube, if you're listening to this especially, I highly suggest you check it out on YouTube. You can see our new studio, which is gradually coming together here. And we put some other videos on there quite frequently to kind of mix things up a little bit.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And you can find that at Turning Profit. That's on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's about it, Heather.
Yeah. Well, another great episode. And we will see you guys back here next week.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
Ready to start turning profit yourself? Head to turningprofit.com to step up your real estate investing game. See you on the next episode.